I guess I'm a loser. A loser! Too far! God! Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for the advice.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you once again to recap and do a bit of a post-mortem for the New York Football Giants. Before we get into it, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zoraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. All right, boys. Let's jump into it. And just to put into perspective the dedication of this group right now, Weiss putting himself through hell, COVID, Minnesota, Philadelphia, tailgating with CC Sabathia, getting on live TV. He was on TV just to get his heart ripped out. Me is currently 6-something a.m. in Las Vegas. And here I am awake on a Monday morning to record this post-mortem. And then Nick, who has to put up with our bullshit and deal with our wacky schedules. But here we are. Okay. Giants-Eagles wasn't close. It was never close. It was a massacre. I couldn't have been more wrong about how this game was going to go. It got away from them quickly. It really did. And this is just not a team that is built to catch up to big deficits quickly, especially against a team whose offense can be as high octane as the Eagles. That's really what it boils down to. I think talent disparity reared its ugly head. It's something that we spoke about all season. And I've been saying for weeks that in the playoffs, coaching is the great equalizer. And I still believe that. And I still think that you're seeing that around the league. We saw it for 49ers with Kyle Shanahan versus Mike McCarthy. I think we saw that, especially in that game. But it just so happens that the large talent disparity between the Eagles and the Giants in the playoffs also probably happened to be Dable, Kafka, and Wink's worst coached game of the entire season, at least in my opinion. It's certainly up there. I didn't love the game plan. I didn't love some of the decisions, especially after it got away from them. There were some questionable play calls early, the fourth down we'll talk about. But I think that at a 30,000-foot view, talent disparity combined with it being the worst coach game, in my opinion, I mean, at least being that it was a playoff game, bad combo, and the Giants got their shit kicked in. At the end of the day, I don't think it matters. This is year one. The Giants were playing with house money. I think everyone needs to really put it into perspective, which is hard to do, especially because they beat Minnesota. And that confidence sort of builds. And I was guilty of that. I was very guilty of that going into the game against the Eagles. And you can lose perspective on the season as a whole. This was a successful season. This was a really successful season. I don't think this season could have gone any better. Between the coaching staff proving themselves, between the quarterback taking the next step, between the camaraderie and the culture, the true culture, the winning culture that we saw grow in this organization. I really am proud of this group. I think that this is going to be a team that'll be a force to be reckoned with in the NFC East in another year or two. I think there's still a lot of work to do, but this was a really good year one for a new regime, and I'm really proud of them. And the next few years are going to be really, really fun. I truly believe that.
Yeah, I think when you look at it the blueprint is right in front of the Giants on where they want to get to. They have to, if they want to get to where they want to get to, they have to go through Philadelphia. And you're going to have to build your team to beat the Eagles. But in this game, I think the talent discrepancy was huge. It was clear pretty early on that the Eagles were like the only way the Giants were going to win this. Like, I don't think they could put together a game plan with this roster to beat this team. Like, you would need the Eagles to play significantly worse than what they have been doing this season for the Giants to win this game. I really don't think Jalen Hurts was healthy fully, but they just really didn't need to do anything with him. At times it was 7-on-7. The Giants couldn't get to him. The Eagles offensive line is really good. Lane Johnson makes a tremendous difference for them. Jason Kelsey's on his way to the Hall of Fame. You know, and then on the outside, I mean, they're the skill players. I mean, they have it all. I think Devontae Smith might be just as good as A.J. Brown, or if in the, or in that same class with A.J. Brown. He's a really good player. The Eagles ran the ball 268 yards on the ground. I think they've rushed for close to 700 yards against the Giants in the three meetings this season. The
Giants. And what hurts the most about that is that it wasn't just a we're up big and we're going to run it. It was, this is also part of the game plan. And then we're up big, and then we're going to keep running it.
Yeah, I mean, Kenneth Gainwell had 112 yards on the ground. Miles Sanders had 90. Jalen Hurts had 34. Boston Scott had 32. But they could have...
Boston Scott, by the way.
I mean, they easily could have ran the ball with anybody. They could have ran the ball with me out of the stands, and I probably would have got... I probably would average 4 yards per carry. The Giants just had no answer whatsoever for this team. And yeah, coaching only goes a long way. It was evident pretty early that this was going to get ugly, and it got ugly. And then obviously, you know, when you sit back and you look at it, it was a good season for the Giants. They've accomplished a lot. There's a lot of questions that they answered that were unanswered entering the season. You got to be confident, but this is going to hurt. But at the same time, if you're a Giant fan, you know, you're sitting there, you're like, I mean, it's pretty obvious what we need to do. Like, the question isn't like, what is it going to take? No, we know what it's going to take. You have to build a team to beat the Eagles. They are the class. They're not just the class of the NFC. They're the class of the NFC. They're not going anywhere. You know, I was talking to LPG there, and we were like this is what we got to get through. And he's like, yeah, and they're not getting any worse. I mean, they have another top 10 pick coming up. You know, they just keep getting these draft picks. So it's like, you know, this is the task. You have to get through the Philadelphia Eagles. You have to find a way. They've dominated us over the last, decade. Everybody knows we haven't won there since the Chip Kelly era. So it's going to be a tall task. But, we hope that we have the right people that can, put together a roster that can compete with these guys.
There was nothing the Giants could have done. I mean, that first possession, they came out in a one high look. They hit that bomb over the top to Devontae Smith. The Giants say, okay, we're going to go to a two high and we're going to try and keep everything in front of us. And then the Eagles said, okay, we're going to run right at you. We dare you to stop us. Jalen Smith missed about 50 tackles in that game. The Giants have no speed on the second level of that defense. No matter what the Eagles were doing, going wide, using perimeter of the field, a lot of those quick RPOs, get the ball out one-on-one on the outside, and then the person with the ball in their hands has to make someone miss and go. I mean, we saw a couple times where Adoree blew up the guy in front of him who was blocking to try and make that play, but the Giants just didn't have the personnel for this type of game on either side of the ball, frankly. I mean, there was a play in I think it was the first quarter, might've been the second quarter, where Feliciano snapped the ball, looked up, and was already in Daniel Jones's lap, how fast he got blown up. There was absolutely nothing he could, by the time he looked up, he was already in Jones's lap. The Giants got destroyed at the line of scrimmage, and it sucks because you at least felt you had a chance at getting after Hurts the way the pass rush played last week. And the Eagles offensive line is clearly a lot better than Minnesota. I mean, they have three guys who've been all pros. They have four guys who have been pro bowlers on that offensive line at different points in their careers. But that's where it starts, man. You think about these teams that are consistently making runs in the playoffs. You think about San Francisco, you think about Cincinnati, you need a pass rush that can get after the quarterback. And right now the Giants have seen the limits of their pass rush with the guys they have. This is a good starting point. This is a lot further along than we thought they would be. But we knew coming into this game against Philadelphia, it would take something special to win. We said they needed a really good game out of Jones. The offensive line would need to hold up, and special teams wouldn't kill them. Special teams didn't kill them, which was nice, but that's the only thing they had go their way in this game.
Which is shocking too, by the way.
Yeah.
of all the units to not let them down, special teams being the one, it's not something you would have predicted going into the game. At least I wouldn't have.
I mean, there was no opportunity for special teams to ruin this game.
That's a fair point.
The Eagles didn't punt, so it's...
Yeah,
it was brutal, man. And just being there, like I tweeted it, it was like being in hell, man. Like it was bad. It was not a fun experience.
So like the episode of The Sopranos where Chrissy comes out of the coma and he says hell is St. Patrick's Day and every day you're in an Irish bar. So hell for you would be going to an Eagles Giants game where the Eagles are winning 38-7 every day.
Well, the thing is, guys, it wasn't even that, like, they weren't even like obnoxious. It was just like, the score tied, like they were just 7-0, 14-0, 21-0, 28-0, and it's just like in your face. But the worst of it, really, it wasn't even an Eagle fan, it was a Giant fan that just pissed me off. So I'm sitting there, and then there's a guy behind. First of all, he's wearing a red Giants jersey. If you're wearing a red Giant jersey, like that right there is a big red flag for me. Dude's wearing a red Giant jersey. You just knew that this guy was going to cause some kind of problem, right? And I'm sitting near him. It's like, I don't want to be lumped into this. So he's like, we're going to win. He comes into his seat. We're going to win. I'm like, all right, I love the confidence. And he's like, you know, we got to do it. I'm like, yeah. I was, you know, so he's looking at me, you know, trying to engage in a conversation, right? You kind of tell when somebody's trying to get, you know, your attention. I'm like, yeah, we got to stop the run first. And he's like, yeah, stop the run. And then number two, we got to break Jalen Hurts' leg.
Oh, God.
And I look at him, and I'm like, okay, I got to get myself out of this conversation because this is just not
– smart.
Yeah.
Which is funny, by the way, because you went from I'm going to put a Giants T-shirt over the Rocky statue when the Giants win to I cannot associate with a fan who probably, in terms of, like, a drunken rudeness factor, not even really comparable to Nicky Snacks, who you wanted to go to Minnesota with. I mean,
No.
These are the highs and lows, the mountains and the valleys of Weiss's fandom right here.
It gets worse. It wasn't even that, like the whole break Jalen Hurts. That's one thing. Then the game starts, and he's just like, every single play, he's like, we need to, like, he was just saying dumb shit. Like, you know, people that think they have it all figured out, like, we need to hit him harder. I'm like, yeah, I think they're purposely not trying to tackle. Or they're purposely not trying to hit.
Jalen Smith was not trying to tackle any. I will dispute that. Jalen Smith was not.
And then he would be like, this guy sucks. That guy sucks. And in the meantime, the Eagles are just like 7-0, 14-0. And this motherfucker behind me is just running his mouth. And I'm just like, yeah, this is torture. And then when Daniel Jones throws the interception, I just put my head down. And I'm like, I almost fell to the floor. Like, it was brutal.
That felt like the dagger.
Yeah. Because that came at 14-0. There was nothing. You were not coming back from three scores down.
And it was at midfield. And it was James Bradbury. Yeah. It was.
And by the way,
it was Murphy's Law. It was everything that can go wrong will go wrong. And it just started to snowball.
And when James Bradbury threw the interception, I'm thinking in my mind how for the week leading into this game, there were, and I promised myself I wasn't going to talk about this, but it was just on my mind when I saw James Bradbury pick that off. The fact that people wanted to sit there and give his fucking flowers for an entire week.
Thank you, Nick.
To me, I'm sitting there and I'm like, are you, like, I didn't want to engage in it because, you know, I don't want to engage in it. Like, I'm so happy he's gone. And I don't want to even want to talk about it. But the fact that people sat there for an entire week, we're in the divisional round of the playoffs, and they want to talk about this guy deserving credit. And I have people texting me like, I don't think there's anything wrong with what I'm doing. And I'm just like, leave me the F alone. I do not want to engage in this conversation. But the fact that people want to talk about that where James Bradbury was on this team and was probably, I mean, give or take, the third or fourth best defensive player, maybe like the fifth or sixth best overall player on a team that lacked some real serious talent, but they had to cut him because they didn't have enough salary cap space to sign their draft class, and people want to give this guy his flowers. The Eagles should be giving him flowers because of how horrible he was. And it really pissed me off, and just and then James Bradbury gets the pick.
I don't want to dwell on he who shall not be named. Well, you know, I like Will's term for Joe Shane's despicable predecessor for too long. But the people that I don't know how to say this, they were giving him his flowers without giving him his flowers, if you know what I'm talking about. It was like,
giving him a
no. He was really bad, but no. There's no but. He was really, really fucking bad. Like,
case closed.
It was he was really bad, but Dexter Lawrence is pretty. No, he was really bad. Like that. The period goes after bad. The sentence ends after really bad. Like, legitimately the worst in Giants history, probably, or New York history. No one did less with more. So. We're done talking about that. And you're right. They need to sign their fucking draft class. And because of Kyle Rudolph, James Bradbury is on the other side of the field in a fucking playoff game picking off Daniel Jones. And another thing, because you're talking about, you know, James Bradbury is not some world beater. He's not some killer.
James Bradbury was a second team All-Pro corner this year, by the way.
I know he was, but and you're saying, like, on the defense, you know, he's not the best on the defense, obviously, right? Like, this is a defense that has Dexter Lawrence. Adoree Jackson has been tremendous this year. Like, they have a lot of really good young pieces. Here's the problem with the Giants defense specifically, and I do feel this way about the offense in some areas. If you play on the Giants defense, you are either an All-Pro or should not be in the league. Like, That is, with so many positions, it's not just the talent disparity between the Giants and other teams. It's the talent disparity between the players on the units. It's like you have Dexter Lawrence, who's one of the best defensive tackles in the league, and right behind him is Jalen Smith, who should be valeting cars at Morton's next year. Like, there is no in between. It is, you either are incredible, or have, like, you were a top draft pick with the potential. Like, Adoree Jackson has been unbelievable. Xavier McKinney's young. He's so good. Kayvon Thibodeau is like fifth overall pick. He's going to be like an insanely good pass rusher. And then you have motherfuckers like fucking Jalen Smith, who is the worst linebacker I've watched since.
It's like, why
are we? Oh God, it's so frustrating.
That speaks to how bad the last guy was, that they have to have these guys off the street because they can't afford to sign good players. They did not have the cap space to have anything beyond guys off of the street for veteran minimums because of how bad the last guy managed the salary cap. Like, as good, and some of the players who are expensive are playing well. Like, Adoree is expensive, but he's been good. Leonard Williams was pretty good this year, but he's expensive. Those were conscientious decisions of, I need to save my job. Let's throw as much money at the problem as possible and see what happens, as opposed to having a coherent strategy for building something for more than 1 year at a time. Why did they bring in Kyle Rudolph? Does anyone know why they brought in Kyle Rudolph?
No idea.
No.
Listen, they have a lot of work to do. Defensively, they got it. The defensive line, I still think, needs more depth. But Azeez Ojulari, as much as I love the guy, and I actually did meet him at the game too, it's painfully obvious that right now, truthfully speaking, he's nothing more than a situational pass rusher for the Giants. He's not somebody that can count on full time. So you need another pass rusher. Like a real pass rusher.
Yeah.
You need to build that defensive line. Justin Ellis, all season long, anytime he would come in for Dexter Lawrence or Leonard Williams, he was a liability. And he's one of those guys with Jalen Smith and Fabian Moreau and all these, you know, Richie James, these guys that they signed off the streets for, you know, vet minimums. He's one of those guys that they have to replace. They have to get their defensive line depth up. Linebackers, I mean, for the last like 20 years, you could talk about linebackers with the Giants. They need linebackers. Listen, Jalen Smith, his football story sucks. What happened to him, you know, the injuries and all that. But it's clear he's not an answer for the Giants at linebacker. They don't have any real linebackers. And in the secondary, I mean, we'll see. They have some free agents, but they need a corner and they need to shore up that secondary. And I think, you know, Xavier McKinney, one of the early things that happened that made you realize that this was not a game the Giants could win.
When he got beat over the top, yeah.
Yeah, when Goddard just had his way with him. That's when I was like, okay, because if there was a matchup where, like, okay, if we can at least do that, okay, we can get Adoree, take A.J. Brown, limit his ability. McKinney has to do this with Goddard. But when we saw that McKinney couldn't do that, then it was tough. But they desperately need to continue to build, you know, the defense, and it needs a lot of work. And then offensively, we know what they need. But like I mentioned, man, like, the blueprint or you know, what you need to build toward is right in front of you. It's the Philadelphia Eagles. You have to build your team to beat the Eagles. What's the easiest way to get to the postseason? The clearest path through your division, right? The Giants, as good of a season as they had, they finished with just, you know, they finished the division with a record with 1-5-1. They didn't beat the Cowboys. They didn't beat the Eagles. So you know what they need to do to get into that class. They have to build this roster out. And I think you should have hope, because if you look at their roster, and the one thing we talked about all year is the contribution they were getting at a veteran minimum guys, right? Jalen Smith, Fabian Moreau, Richie James, Isaiah Hodgins, you know, all these guys that were signed for these vet minimum deals. Well, now they're going to have another draft class. They're going to have some money to spend in free agency. So that sort of gives you hope that, hey, you know, with some real money to spend and some more draft capital, they can continue to build this roster out with better players.
No, I don't have much to add to what you said, Weiss. I mean, the blueprint is pretty clear. And the Giants are not almost there, but they have a good foundation. They have adults in the building. They have what we hoped to be our foundational pieces, yes, in key positions. We could talk about one of those foundational pieces if you'd like.
Sure.
I don't know if anyone's opinions have changed based on the result of the Eagles game. I tend to be very reactionary as it comes to the quarterback position. I don't know how I'm feeling, and I don't really know how Dable's feeling, to be quite honest. Deciding to just punt the ball away late in the game
on fourth and
when
five. It
was pretty, what?
It was fourth and five, yeah.
Yeah. Deciding to punt there was weird. And I don't mean to sound like Bill Simmons. It was a weird decision. But
it was waving the white flag. We don't want anyone getting hurt. We don't want anyone getting hurt. This is it. We're done.
Is that it? I don't think they're
waving the white flag.
I know they're waving the white flag, but I don't think that's because of injuries. I think that's like.
They went for it from fourth and like 10 earlier in the game.
Yeah, on the first drive, second drive of the game. Yeah.
Which, by the way, let's just back up real quick. That might have been the most frustrated I've been with Kafka and Dable all season. If you are even thinking about going for it on fourth down in that situation,
you gotta
why
have a
on third and three are you throwing the ball?
Yeah.
Run the damn football.
They got
worst
away from
case,
the run too early.
You have fourth and three. Worst case.
Well, it was third and three. They got a sack. I don't think they were.
Why are you throwing the ball?
Well, I don't think they were planning on going for it on fourth down until they got into no man's land, because the sack pushed them from, I think, the 35 to like
the 43, something like that.
So I don't think the plan was, hey, we're going to lose 8 yards on this play.
And so what, they were going to kick a field goal? Because that was because at 35, you're looking at a 52 yarder.
Yeah.
Field goal.
It was still seven. It was only 7-0. I think it was the first.
Right, but the point is, and listen, I say this as a Graham Gano stan. One of the beat reporters was saying that pregame, I think the furthest Gano was taking him from was 52. So at that point, you're at like the edge of his range, right? And we're talking about a coaching staff that's not afraid to go for it. We saw them go for it pretty much at least once the last 3 or 4 weeks in every game. Like, you have to know better in that situation. Both of you are the quarterback. If you are the offensive coordinator, if you're the head coach, like this is a situation where, hey, if we don't get this, if we only get a yard or two, we're going to go for it. And if that's the case, you have to run on 3rd and 3. You cannot put yourself in a situation against the pass rush, Weiss, which you were praising all week and for good reason. Don't put yourself, especially with Evan Neal and the interior of that line, like you can't put yourself in that situation. That was awful. And I don't know. I really don't know in the moment what my feelings were about going for it on 4th and 10. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, obviously.
Fourth and eight,
whatever. Might as well have been 4th and 15 against this defense. Yeah. Like, that's just really bad situational football. Really bad from Dable and Kafka.
Well, you look at where they were. It was 3rd and 3 from the Philadelphia 35-yard line.
Run the ball.
Daniel Jones gets sacked. That's on 3rd and 3, gets sacked. It's 4th and 8. Then he gets sacked again. So that was 13 yards going in the opposite direction. I didn't think it was a good night for the coaching staff. But
no, it wasn't.
Like I said when we opened the show, I just didn't think there was anything they could have done. I'm not making excuses for them. I just don't think there was any game plan they could have put together that would have changed the outcome. Like, in hindsight, if they would have said, okay, 4th and 8 from the 40, you know, we're going to punt. There's no doubt in my mind that the Eagles would not have taken that ball and gone down the field and scored on the Giants. Like, it was just that type of, like, some things are just painfully obvious. It was painfully obvious, guys, early on. You saw it. They were faster than us. They were better than us.
It was almost as painfully obvious as how painfully obvious it was that the Bengals were going to beat the brakes off the Bills. And I tried to warn you, Weiss.
Come on, man.
I tried. Sorry, we'll save the go around the NFL in our part two. This is going to be a two-parter. But anyway, not to cut you off, but that my original point was the quarterback.
Yes. Nothing has changed.
Maybe something has changed. I wouldn't say that. I'm caught in between. There's nothing that he could have done that would have altered the game at all. I mean, listen, he could have played like prime Montana. You know, the Giants are not winning that game with Brady and Belichick. They're, you know, like this is not an indictment on like his level of talent. But at the same time, like, there were plenty of things that he could have done better, and there were plenty of opportunities for better situational awareness. I mean, the one that stands out is him running out of bounds on that. I forget what the down was. It was late in the game, like running out of bounds instead of throwing the ball away. Dable not going
trying to make a play on that one.
Whatever. Dable punting the ball away late in the game instead of at least going for it. Like, you can't wave the white flag in any situation here in a playoff game. And I don't know if he just didn't have confidence in his quarterback. He didn't have confidence in his offense at that stage in the game. But like, I don't know. I'm sort of back. I'm not back to where I was earlier in the season. Like, I still think that the Giants should bring back Daniel Jones, because I do still want to see what he can do when he has better receivers around him and an offensive line that isn't really a liability outside of left tackle. But like, are we so sure that they're going to give him like a big extension? Like, maybe they actually use the franchise tag on him, because
what define a big extension?
High 30s.
Oh, he's gonna get
for 3 to 4 years.
For 3 years to 4 years, yeah, he's gonna get that. Yes,
I don't know. I don't know if he will.
I mean, if you're asking me, if you're asking me if it's closer to 30 or 40, I would say it's probably closer to 30. But I told you guys this coming into the playoffs. There's nothing he could do that's gonna lose him money. He can only make himself money. He won a playoff game. Like, he has. I mean, Dak Prescott's been in the league how many years? Dak Prescott won a playoff game and he got paid a lot of money.
Yeah, but comparing how you want to build a team to the Dallas Cowboys is not the.
Well, the Dallas Cowboys haven't built a bad team. They just don't. They've.
Mm. They do have money tied up in bad things. They had to give away Amari Cooper for no reason.
But in terms of like talent, like they have the level of talent on their team to
compete. Listen, my point is, like, going into this game, I was very confident that the Giants would just get an extension done and he would be the guy for many more years. And now I'm like sort of toss up between that and them just giving him the franchise tag and saying, we're going to get you some more talent. And like, we actually want to see you do it again and do it against better competition. And if that's the case, then we will gladly give you like a big extension. I think regardless, he's the quarterback next year. I just don't know under what circumstances. That's really what I'm getting at.
Real quick. The franchise tag is at like $32
million. Yeah.
They're gonna say, we'll take $32 million, multiply it by three. And the 2 years, essentially, we'll give you two franchise tags guaranteed. So we'll give you $64 million guaranteed on like a three-year deal. And then we'll pay you a little bit more annually. So we'll do, you know, $35, $36 million. But you have to look at – the thing about the quarterback market is you don't get to define it. It defines itself. So when somebody gets paid, when the next guy's up, that's who you're comparing yourself to when you're next in line. Now, whether you deserve to be in that line is a different question. But, I mean, you look at the guys that got paid before him and then you compare it to him. Like, he's not going to get – you know, what Deshaun Watson got or what Russell Wilson got or what Lamar's
going to get. No, not at all.
But you look at, you know, David Carr and you look at Derek Carr. You look at what Tannehill got, you know, when he went on that run with the Titans. So, I mean, you have to look at what the other quarterbacks sort of in his tier are, where what they got and where they are. I mean, he's going to get, you know, that 35, 36, 37. Like, that's just
I get it completely. I'm just not convinced that that's what they're gonna do. Like, I think the better situation for the Giants would be a franchise tag. Do it again, because if it turns out that he's not like the guy and they get him all this talent, or you know, they go out, they draft him a receiver, they go out, they get him a receiver, and like, that's sort of the beauty of the situation the Giants are in, where, like, I'm very pro-player. Like, go get your money, go get your bag, because life is short and an injury can ruin everything in a second. But notoriously, teams have had control. Like, I understand players can hold out and demand trades, and there has been more power to the player over the last few years. But, like, if you're the Giants, why wouldn't you want to just franchise him? Make him do it again. Because this quarterback class, in my opinion, like, there's some solid options, but the Giants aren't in position at all to get any of these guys, and nor do they have the draft capital to trade up for one. So you franchise him, make him do it again. And if he, I mean, like you said, Weiss, like, do you envision a season next year that he has where all of a sudden he goes from like a $35 million a year quarterback to a $48 million a year quarterback? No, I don't. So if you franchise tag him, make him do it again, and he does, you gladly give him mid to high $30 million a year. And if he doesn't, then you look for another option. But
it's the most prudent thing. It's the most prudent thing to do. It's setting yourself up for giving yourself a ripcord where if he doesn't play well, you're not tied up multiple years. You don't have to worry about trying to find a landing spot for him like Carson Wentz or Sam Darnold or some of these guys we've seen where they have money tied up in them for multiple years. It's just the safest thing to do. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. It's the safest thing to do.
I agree. Like, this is like, this is not a I'm not knocking Jones as much as Weiss's facial reactions over the Zoom right now.
No, I'm not saying you're knocking him.
Make it seem like, and you also have to think about the GM. Like, this is a team that didn't renew the guy's fifth year option. Like, coming into the season, Joe Shane was looking for that ripcord. Joe Shane did not want him as the quarterback going forward. And he played well enough to at least make it a questionable decision. And that's real. And that's incredible. And that's what we were looking for. So at this, you know, why not make him do it again? When, if you have that option to not tie up that money in him long term, make him do it again. You have nothing to lose.
Okay, so it's one thing if you're saying franchise tag him and let him play on the tag. There's pros and cons to that too, because if he has another great season or a good season, right, and he is better statistically and the team makes the playoffs again, then you're going to have to pay him a lot more. But I just want to put something in perspective for you. So you look at the annual salary for quarterbacks. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is at $50 million. Russell Wilson's 49. Kyler Murray is at 46. I don't think we could definitively say that Kyler Murray is better than Daniel Jones, but that's where Kyler is at 46 million. Deshaun's at 46 million. Mahomes 45. You know, Allen 43. Derek Carr's at $40 million. Matt Stafford's at $40 million. Dak Prescott's at $40 million. Kirk Cousins, who he just beat, is at $35 million. Jared Goff's at $33 million. And then obviously you got Wentz and, you know, Matt Ryan, and then Tannehill's at 29. And then you got Brady and the rest. So, again, I understand what you're saying in terms of what makes sense for the Giants. But you have to understand, the market isn't determined by the Giants. The market is determined by the market. And right now, where you would put Daniel Jones in that category is, okay, he's not an elite guy. So we can rule out that $250 million or all those other crazy deals that we see the quarterbacks get. But right under there, I mean, Stafford's at $40 million.
Stafford won a Super Bowl.
Stafford used to be traded.
He was also traded, and he used to be elite. Listen, I understand the point that you're trying to make, and here's my only counter to that. And it's not even a question. It is a statement and a personal belief. You're basically saying, if we franchise Jones and he plays well, in the words of Marlo Stanfield, the price of the brick going up.
Well, also, if you franchise him, that's $32, $33 million right there gone.
But it's only for one. But it's only for 1 year. And my 100%,
but
my point is, I would gladly, if we franchise him and he balls out next year, I would gladly up that contract by another $10 million a year for that certainty that he's the guy.
It's not going to be $10 million a year. It's going to be more than that.
It's not going to be more than that.
I mean, you got to understand these quarterbacks, especially the ones that are getting lined up to get paid. Like, we all agree Justin Herbert's a better quarterback than Daniel Jones. But if Daniel Jones has better success than Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert ends up making, you know, $45, $50 million a year, which he's probably going to, that's what Daniel Jones is going to look for, because he's going to say, like, you guys are shaking your head, but we see this all the time. Like, this is how the quarterback market is. So I'm not saying I agree with it, but that's just how the market is. And you can't, like, if you sit there and say, oh, prove it. Well, how you define prove it is not how you define it. It's how the market defines it. So if he goes out there and you say, okay, Daniel Jones, we're going to take $32 million of our $60 million that we have in salary cap space. We're going to franchise tag you for 1 year. He's going to sign it, no problem, because that's more than he's going to make on a long-term deal per year, or, you know, guaranteed at the time of signing. So he's going to sign it, and he goes out there and plays. They have another season where they're successful. He has better statistical numbers, per se. Guess what? That price tag is going to go up exponentially. Then he's going to look at himself and say, well, I'm not looking at Derek Carr and Matthew Stafford and Dak Prescott. No. I'm going to look at Josh Allen. I'm going to look at Justin Herbert. I'm going to look at Joe Burrow and all these other guys. But again, Nick, you're making that face. But again,
that's a multiple year thing, though. Those guys have done that for 3 or 4 years of a career. If Dan Jones goes out there next year and throws for 4,500 yards, rushes for 700, and has like 45 total touchdowns, okay, that's one thing. But Josh Allen did that 3 years in a row. Mahomes went to a Super Bowl and won. If Dan Jones wins a Super Bowl, okay, we can talk about $45 million.
You don't get to define the quarterback market. The quarterback.
Let the Steelers give Daniel Jones $45 million. Let the Colts give Daniel Jones.
But that is the market. Nick is describing the market.
No, the market is not that. We just saw Kyler Murray get $46 million.
Yes, because that
he was an MVP candidate last year.
Yeah,
but first of all,
that was multiple years of
the first 5 weeks of the season. It doesn't make you an MVP candidate.
They were 7-1 at week 8 last year. The Cardinals, or maybe 8.
And the Giants were 7-2 at one point. You can't.
Yeah, but not because of Daniel Jones. The Cardinals' entire offense was Kyler Murray make a play. The Giants were 7-1 because of Brian Daboll.
You can't.
Yes, you can. I watched the games. Daniel Jones threw for 210 yards from weeks 1 to 12.
You want to go give Joe Burrow $50 million a year? God bless. He's on his way to a second Super Bowl.
Yeah, that That's the difference we're talking about here. Let bad teams make those decisions. There's a reason the Cardinals aren't going to win anything with Kyler Murray making $47 million a year. There's a reason the Browns probably won't win anything with Deshaun Watson making $46 million a year. You have to know your breaking point. Once you reach a certain threshold of your quarterback making your salary, unless it's somebody like Mahomes where you have them for 10 years and you can constantly re-roll that money years going forward, it just does not make financial sense for you to tie yourself up in someone for a multiple year period, unless over an extended period of time.
And I agree, Nick. And the NFL is going to have a come to Jesus moment, especially after this past season. Fun. Yeah, they are. The quarterback market is going to have to calm down for a year because of all the bad contracts that have been given out between some of the guys that were just mentioned, between Deshaun Watson, between Russell Wilson. Like, teams are going to realize, holy fuck, like, we have to maybe go for the draft here. Like, we cannot afford to give these older guys all this money and bad contracts. Like, there is going to be some sort of market correction. I don't know what it is. Either way, we're getting away from the crux of the conversation, which boils down to, I want Daniel Jones back next year. I just want him back on the salary cap. And if he goes out there and he balls out and he's worth $45 million, and I will gladly use this year and pay that extra $10 million for the certainty that he's the guy. That's my point.
I agree with that. That's the thing. You want to see him do it again. This is the first real time you've seen him make consistently flash. This is the point.
And he was really good at points this year, but he wasn't like a god.
Yeah.
So go out there and do it again. I'll gladly franchise you, and I'll gladly pay you $45 a year if you turn out to be that dude.
Exactly. One good run doesn't make you the dude. An extended period of time makes you the dude. Weiss, do you want to give him the Joe Flacco extension? That's the what's it called? The extreme end of the one run guys, making
the,
a
the Joe Flacco extension those were really longer deals. I'm not saying he's getting that. What I'm saying is that if you franchise tag him and he has another good year, then he's going to demand that longer-term deal. What I'm saying is, hey, let's do a 3-year extension, 4-year extension, where the first 2 years are guaranteed, right? And then let's see him do that. Let's make him the quarterback for the next couple of seasons, and then we'll see if he can earn that longer-term deal.
You know what the Giants could do after they franchise tag him?
What?
They could franchise tag him again.
Yeah, but you're talking... But with the longer term deal, like 3 years, 4 years, you can spread that cap space out. And then when you get to that third year, if he's answered that question, you can just extend him again and lower the cap. I'm saying it gives you more flexibility to just, instead of going year to year on the franchise tag, just do a 3 or 4 year deal. I don't see any. He played really well. I understand it wasn't statistically great, but you win a playoff game. You take your team to the playoffs. You don't have the weapons that other teams do. See, it's one thing if he has weapons. Then you could have an argument that this is...
I want to get him those weapons.
No, I understand. I'm saying, but if it's one thing if he had weapons, like in terms of this conversation about contract and how much you give him, it's one thing if he had the weapons and you're like, well, this is probably where he's capped out. He's never had the weapons. That's my point.
I agree with you. So this year... We got him a coaching staff. Next year, let's get him some weapons. Let's see what he can do with both of them together. And then we'll talk a long term. That's it. That's all I'm saying. I want him back. I want to see what he can do with real weapons.
And I'm saying 3 years at $37 million.
Listen, we'll see what happens.
First two guaranteed. Don't play with the franchise tag.
Yeah.
If he plays well again, then Nick says what? That Joe Flacco deal, the Kyler Murray contract comes into play. I'm saying for the next 2 years, 3 years, whatever, give him a contract. If he earns it and he sort of
gets the back of that contract. Yeah, but by then, who are the big contracts on the roster? Dex and Andrew Thomas.
Yeah, but you can't do down the road like that. I'm talking about...
That's a year from now, Andrew Thomas and Dexter Lawrence could be as soon as this year. They could get something done for a long time.
They better get something done. Yeah, all I'm saying is the cap situation in 2 years is not going to be that bad, even if they do have to pay Daniel Jones a lot of money.
But that's not the point. The point is you don't want to bet. He talked about the Joe Flacco deal. I'm saying to avoid that, instead of going year to year, Take it like the franchise tag's $32 million. Daniel will give you 36, 37.
You're advocating for the car extension for Jones, which that's not the end of the world. Three by 120 ish, the first two guaranteed. That's relatively fine. It's just, you know, you want to see him do it again. That's all.
4 years, all right. 148 million, 37 million per year.
I want to talk about some other contracts. I'm sick of this conversation, and I have to go in a few minutes anyway.
Okay.
Disgusting. Disgusting. Despicable. Posturing by Leonard Williams and Saquon Barkley. Oh my God, disgusting.
Why?
Do you think that those two guys are going out there and saying that shit publicly without the advice of their agent?
Yes.
No, absolutely not. Their agent is telling them, go out there and basically say these things, because Saquon Barkley's top speed on that breakaway run that in 2018, 2019 would have gone for a touchdown was 19 miles an hour. This is a guy with an extensive injury history who played well and was healthy throughout the course of the season, basically going to the media and going to John Mara, who's got no other marketable players on this roster, right? No offensive superstars, and basically begging to come back and saying, oh, you know, Mr. Mara, I would take a little bit less money if you give me some term. That's despicable, disgusting that the media is falling for it. And same thing with Leonard Williams. Oh, Dexter Lawrence is the best player. Oh, you know, I shrug my shoulders. I haven't really thought about it. You know, yes, you have, you bozo. That's why you're telling it to the media. You might take a pay cut or a restructure to come back. Get out of here. Get out of here. The fact that the media and the fans are eating this up is embarrassing.
First of all, I'm not eating it up. All I'm saying, I thought it was stupid for him to say.
It was the smartest thing that they could have said.
Why would you openly come out and say I'm willing to take?
Because you can make the team look bad if you don't get to an extension. If you can't come to an agreement or something bad happens during the negotiation process, you could say, well, I wanted to be here and the Giants didn't want to pay me what I was asking.
And also, who's going to pay these guys? Who's going to pay these guys outside of the Giants? No one's going to give Saquon Barkley the money the Giants are going to give him.
Are you sure about that?
100%.
You don't think?
Come on now.
Come.
Bill O'Brien's NFL anymore.
Tell me. You're too emotional about these conversations. Saquon was never going to reset the running back market. We knew that. We knew that he was not going to.
Name a team that's going to give him $15 million a year.
Nobody's giving him $15 million a year. The Giants offered him 12 and a half. That's been reported.
Who is going to beat 12 and a half?
There might be a team that's willing to beat
12 no and one. Half. No one.
Not a good team. Not a good team, Ethan.
That's not the point.
The most money for the most term because plays a position that's generally irrelevant, and he's got a laundry list of injuries. He wants to lock in that extension. He knows that no one's going to pay him more than the Giants because he's a household name. He's the only marketable player on the offense. He wants to stay here, and he's going to, like Nick said, he's going to make them look bad, and he's going to come out and say, I'll take less money. I want to be here because New York's the most marketable city in the freaking world. So he's going to go out there publicly and say it. He wants to set the stage for that extension. It's pathetic that the media is eating it up.
The Chicago Bears, I think, would pay Saquon Barkley a lot of money because they have a lot of money to use.
The Bears can go great. They can go 4-13 next year. Great. Him and Justin Fields, great.
You keep moving this goalpost. He asked me, who do I think would pay?
A good team. If he goes to what good team? Because great, you go to the Bears, good, you get paid.
Good team, bad team.
The Bears traded a second round pick for Chase Claypool.
Okay, yes. Again, you guys keep moving. Like
I'm not moving any goalposts. I'm my flag in the sand. There is no team that would give him more than $12 million a year. Zero. Zero.
That's what he's going to get.
I wouldn't want to be the team that does because that's probably not a well-run team.
Leonard Williams, I think he's on the team next year regardless. He doesn't want to be a cap casualty. That's why he's coming out and saying that because his cap hit is fucking a gazillion dollars. His cap hit is going to be more than what? Every quarterback except for 10? Insane.
Leonard Williams was never going to be a cap casualty because
because of the restructure.
Because he has a $22 million dead cap hit.
Correct. So he's saying he wants to be a Giant long term, He right. wants to lock in the bag. He wants that extension. That's why he would take less.
And I think I would give him an extension. Oh. He's a good player.
Oh, Mr. USC Leonard Williams. You're laughing it off just like Paul Schwartz.
Nick, what was Leonard? Was Leonard Williams a good player this year or not? Yes or no?
He's a good player, but I don't know if he's worth the cap hit. That's the thing. He's
definitely not worth the cap hit.
I agree with you. He's not worth a $32 million cap hit, but with an extension, you can lower that. I think you guys are too emotional about these subjects, man. I'm telling you guys.
No, I'm not.
You don't get rid of these.
Wait, you went to Minnesota and Philadelphia. That's not emotional?
I almost had to look for a new podcast co-host because you were going to go put a Giants jersey over the Rocky statue and get yourself killed. It was going to be me and Nick recording today. You were going to be 10 feet under.
I think you guys are.
Well, I think you're too emotional. Yeah. Yeah. Look, right, I have breakfast in 17 minutes and I still have to shower.
Wrap.
Okay.
We'll be back. Nick, you can edit this. We'll be back for part two in a couple days once I am no longer in Vegas. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at Gotham SN. Subscribe. Yada, yada. You know the drill. We'll talk to you guys in a few days.
Peace.
All right, boys. I got to run.
All right. Peace.
All right, man.
I'll send this to you, Nick.
Awesome.
All right.
Peace. All right.